Covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Funeral. It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I have as my special guest Danny Suras, who has an extensive background in law enforcement. He's been all over the Minnesota riots. We have a lot to fill you in on. Meanwhile, especially for the video version, I'm displaying, you know, the fires going on, burning massively in Minneapolis. We have a report. Looter is shot dead by pawn shop owner, and stores are ransacked and torched as George Floyd protests erupts in violence, and armed vigilantes patrol Minneapolis streets in the second night of violence. More images of what's going on there. Lots going on indeed. A suspected looter has been shot dead outside a pawn shop after protests over the death of George Floyd descended into chaos Wednesday night, and rioters vandalized stores across the city. Minneapolis Department Police Chief John Elder confirmed in a mid-site press conference that one person was shot and killed and another was held in custody. He said officers had responded to reports of a possible stabbing between Bloomington and Lake Streets. The body of a man later confirmed to have been shot was found lying on the sidewalk outside the Cadillac pawn shop. Stores hit included Wednesday's Target, Walmart, and AutoZone, ransacked, looted, some partially set afire before rioters tried to bust open an ATM. Many ignored pleas from the Floyd family lawyer and Minnesota Governor Walz to protest peacefully. Here's another video of stores in flames. during the riots, a woman in a wheelchair was punched in the head, sprayed with a fire extinguisher after trying to block protesters, allegedly with a knife in her hands. More photos of what's going on. Finally, a map. The police chief also slammed the actions of looters and rioters, which he branded disrespectful to Floyd's family and to all the protesters who gathered peacefully to demand justice over his death. If people are there to truly honor the man and his family, this isn't how you do it. And it's so disrespectful, it's heartbreaking. The people are using this as a purpose to make bad decisions. Danny, I want to welcome you and invite you to give us an update, because as you were sketching to me before the show, there have been a lot of developments. Lay them on.
Well, sir, there's so many things happening so quickly, it's almost hard to keep up with the news today. And I just want to say hello and thank you for having me on your show today, sir.
I'm delighted, Danny.
What we got is yesterday is President Trump. I saw his tweet where he called out the National Guard. They're there on the ground. I haven't seen them doing anything yet, but they are on the ground. They just looted an Aldi's grocery store, is my latest report. They set a UPS store on fire, which I don't understand. What did UPS ever do to anybody? But and they're looting a TJ Maxx store. There's hundreds of people being seen coming out of the TJ Maxx with handfuls of clothes and whatever they can carry. And that's pretty much what I can see on the ground as of right this minute, sir.
Well, it's all very embarrassing, and I wish I could tell you this isn't a political stunt, but all the signs indicate that it actually is. Danny, you sent me footage, which I have set up, where the police, the officer is kneeling on the neck of George Floyd. Would you like me to play the footage and you can comment on it?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. You can play the footage. You know, I wish that we didn't have this every time these situations come up. But I'd just like to say, you know, we're finding a lot of anomalies. And the fact that the officers were fired before there was an investigation makes absolutely zero sense, sir. There's always an investigation because there's always more to the story than you can see in these short cell phone video clips or surveillance clips. And I put together all the known surveillance clips, the cell phone video, and analyzed it pretty much frame by frame. I've been doing it for several days now, as it becomes available. And there's many, many anomalies that do not make sense on how this thing got out of control with their suspect.
Yes.
So one of the things...
Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things that, to start, sir, is to give a little background from what we talked about the other day. You know, even the background of the officer does not make any sense that they're saying that did this. There's a lot of anomalies in his personal background that absolutely makes zero sense. Where he actually came from, where he lived as early as 2015. There's a lot of things that don't make sense. He has a Florida background, and so does his wife. But I guess we could just kind of jump over to what everybody wants to talk about, and that's the events that took place with this George. And, by the way, what we talked about the other day, when I did a background check on George Floyd, that's what they're calling the suspect. In the database, sir, it still shows there's no such person as George Floyd. There were only three people in the entire state that went by that name. And as I told you, a recap from the other day, one of them was 105 years old. The other one was 95 years old. And there was one left that was 35 years old. So we looked into the 35-year-old, and his name was spelt backwards. His name was actually Floyd George, not George Floyd. And then when we found his photographs, it wasn't the same person they're showing us on TV. We're having a hard time running down the suspect and his background because we simply can't find any records on him, and that's very puzzling.
I agree. This guy, the purported victim, was quite a large man. I would say he was at least 6'3", maybe 6'5", over 300 pounds. In any case, Danny, I'm going to run now the video. I'll describe what we see there, and you can comment.
Right here, the part that doesn't make any sense to me is they're trying to control a suspect that's already cuffed. The suspect has been cuffed for close to 10 minutes at this point, and they walked him from another location across the street to this location. And what does not make sense is the video we don't have up right now is the surveillance video where the officers first took him into custody. They cuffed him when they got him out of his vehicle, and they sat him down on the ground. And, of course, he was upset. There was a little bit of arm flailing when they cuffed him. He wasn't happy about being pulled out of his car. But they did cuff him. And then the officer walks him across the street very calmly and goes to put him in the car. As soon as he goes to put him in the car, George kind of falls down because he doesn't want to get in the car. And then what happens is the video cuts. And I don't understand that. And then the next thing that shows up is the cell phone footage that we're looking at. And now George is on the other side of the car. If you notice, he's on the street side where the traffic is. And that makes no sense because they walked him up to the driver's side door. So I don't know how he got around and got on this other side. All of a sudden, this policeman started kneeling on him. It doesn't make any sense from the initial surveillance video. If you also notice the officer, his first name is Derek. I'm not sure if we should say his last name on the radio.
Oh, sure.
His first name is Derek, and if you notice Derek's left hand, sir, it's in his pocket almost.
Yes.
This is not police procedure. If you look at it right now, he's not trying to control the suspect. Normally what he would do is he wouldn't use his knee if he could control him with his hands. There's also three other officers there with him that don't appear to be trying to help him. Notice that the Asian officer is standing to his left with his hands in his pockets. He's simply just looking down and doing nothing, like nothing's happening. That's not standard police procedure. Nobody would stand around like that with their hands in their pockets when the suspect needs to be controlled like this. Notice how Derek is almost balancing on the guy. And at one point, he's going to take his hand out of his pocket right there. He just went to balance himself on the car, and then he put his hand back in his pocket. He's not even trying to use his taser. He's not using his hands to control the suspect. There is no police officer that acts like this, sir, to control a suspect. The time that goes by, that he's just standing there. Now, if you notice, sir, he's also looking down at the suspect. He's watching his knee and the suspect's head very closely. And then he looks at the camera. Then he looks down at the suspect and he looks in the camera. So he knows the camera is right there. This is just very odd behavior for a police officer with the supposed experience that they're telling us that he has for controlling a suspect. That's just not the way that a person does this. You would use your hands right now on his shoulders, on his back. Keep in mind, the suspect is cuffed, sir. His hands are behind his back. He has no way of fighting when he's on his stomach and he's cuffed. Okay? So there's really no need for him to be kneeling on him like this in traffic. Traffic is going right behind the officer. They're right in the middle of the street. And this makes no sense. They would want to get him up as fast as possible and get him over to the curb and get him out of traffic and get him in the car. There'd be no need for this video to go on for 5 minutes as it does. It makes absolutely no sense at all.
And I'm sure police officers know that 3 minutes is like the max a person can survive without air, Danny. So this is all the more ridiculous.
You're a bum, bro.
Right. If you notice, what's really troubling to me is that the Asian policeman standing there right there, as I watched them, if I was a supervisor, that's why they have investigations over these things, sir, because they would interview each officer to ask them what they were doing as they go through all the evidence, and they interview them separately. And one of the questions that I would ask as an investigator to that Asian officer is, why are you standing there with your hands in your pocket not trying to help control the suspect? Why didn't you help get him up and get him in the car? What was the point of keeping him on the ground for so long? Can you explain that? This makes absolutely no sense what's taking place right here. If you notice, the suspect is talking. If you notice, the officer Derek that is doing the supposed choking, he removes his knee a few times to alleviate pressure. So as you watch it in slow motion, he's actually behind the suspect's ear. He's not on the front of his throat, and they are talking. So there's many times when you can see he lifts pressure, and then he goes back to applying pressure. He does not keep the constant steady pressure the entire time. So, and then right here, they cut away, and we can't really see what's going on there for a few minutes. As you know, then they cut back. But it absolutely, his behavior, sir, is very troubling to me. There he is again with his hands in his pockets. He's got help there to help him control it. There's four guys, sir, to control a tough suspect. It doesn't take four guys to control a tough suspect.
And you see how the crowd, the spectators, are becoming increasingly agitated because this is so blatantly wrong and offensive and life-threatening if you take it to be real.
Bro, he was just moving. Yeah, it just—it's almost like it's a script. The way that Derek keeps looking over for approval to make sure the camera's on him. This does not make sense. I can't reiterate enough. This is not the behavior of trained police officers to control a suspect, especially one that's cuffed. He would not stay in the traffic in the street with him leaned up against the car for this much time. The man has been handcuffed. He was cuffed before he even hit the ground. He was cuffed 10 minutes ago. So the video is missing. We have no video on how they lost control of the suspect from when they walked him over to the car peacefully. How did it get from putting him in the car on the driver's side? How did the suspect end up on the other side of the vehicle on the ground in the traffic? That is a question that needs to be answered. And there's no video that shows what's going on that side of the car. It's very, very troubling at this point. This is the part that, to me, I got to say it, sir, it almost looks scripted to me. This is just not behavior. The fact that that Asian man is standing there, the Asian police officer, and, it makes no sense. Now you can see the paramedic come out and put his hand on the suspect's throat like he's going to go ahead and check for a pulse. And he doesn't seem to have any concern. He doesn't act with any urgency. There it was. Notice the paramedic just felt for a pulse. And if he didn't feel a pulse, why didn't they immediately start CPR? Why did they not bag him immediately and start breathing for him? There's many, many medical procedures that take place with the suspect immediately. And all they do is pick the suspect up and move him in the ambulance and go. There's no triage, sir. They're breaking all kinds of rules with stabilizing the suspect. You don't pick up a suspect off the ground without assessing his health. And you notice they're not doing that. The report is on the way to the hospital, he had no pulse. Well, they never tried to bag him, and they never tried to resuscitate him. There's a lot of questions to be asked about that. It makes no sense at all from a normal standpoint or a normal procedure standpoint. What we're seeing, it almost looks like a scripted movie. It just, real professionals do not act like this, sir.
Yeah, Danny, I couldn't agree more. We can let that, unless you want me to run a few more seconds of this video.
I think that covers it. What I would like to, sir, do you happen to have handy the video clip that I sent you, the other video clip that shows George during the arrest? Do you have that handy?
I do, Danny, but before, I have them in order. Here's a report that went out over ABC News in Minneapolis, and there's several aspects to this. Let's take a look at that first.
FBI is now investigating the death of a black man who died in police custody in Minneapolis. A disturbing video shows the man pleading that he can't breathe as a white officer was kneeling on his neck during the arrest and kept it there for several minutes, even after the man stopped moving.
Let him down, man. Let him breathe, at least, man.
Let him breathe.
I've been trying to help out. So I got ready to
You noticed the police say the man
matched the description of a suspect in a forgery case and resisted arrest. His death is drawing comparison to the case of Eric Garner, an unarmed black man who died in New York after being placed in a chokehold by police. Garner also told police he couldn't breathe.
And all I keep coming back to is that he should not have died. What we saw was horrible. Completely and utterly messed up. This man's life matters. He matters. He was someone's son.
The mayor of Minneapolis apologized to the black
Danny, let me comment on that briefly. Let me put it on. America
should not be a death sentence.
Hello, I'm Mark Brown.
Let me go back to that of the mayor, because look, Danny, this guy reminds me of someone, and I thought about it, and it's Robbie Parker at Sandy Hook.
Agreed.
This is just not authentic.
What I keep coming back to is that he should not have died. What we saw was horrible. Completely and utterly messed up. This man's life matters. He matters. He was someone's son.
I got to tell you, Danny, this reminds me very much of Robbie Parker, who, you know, came out of the building all jocular, laughing, then looked and saw the assembled press, stopped, paused, hyperventilated to get into character, and then began speaking exactly the way the mayor of Minneapolis is speaking there. With this excess of emotion, it's theatrical, it's fake, it's trained. I'm telling you, watching this again, it just struck me. That's Robbie Parker moved to the Midwest.
You know, sir, I brought that up the other day, and I totally 100% agree. The first thing that came to mind when I saw him, his mannerism. He walks up to the podium. He looks okay when you see the raw footage. Then he does the deep breath and sigh like he's going to get into character. And as soon as I saw him reading from his script, I saw the sigh. That is not a person that's being sincere or genuine. That looks like a script, and I could not agree more, sir. He is exactly like Robbie Parker from Sandy Hook, trying to get into character and give his line or give his speech. And I could not agree more. That is one of the most phoniest fake speeches I've ever seen.
Now, Danny, I've got another piece of footage here. This is actually from neighbors of the officer. And I want you to mention his name because it had a funny aspect to it. What was the last name?
His last name is Chaffin. Chauvin.
Yeah, as though it's supposed to be. Chauvin, and is as in male chauvinist, in other words, bringing together sexism with racism. That's my take. Now, here's the neighbors who are explaining they had no idea the guy was a cop. They thought he was in real estate. Listen to this.
Where you know who is? Why, are you worried?
Yes.
What do you got to be worried about?
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Did you know the Chauvins?
No.
You know what? We didn't. We didn't know he was a
friends? I'm from the Daily Mail. Were they friends with anyone?
Oh, we were just talking about it this morning.
No, what do you guys think about what happened?
It's terrible.
You guys don't agree with him? Oh, God.
No.
Thank you.
Who would agree with that?
Thank
yeah.
You.
Oh, my
That's
God.
Amazing.
The whole neighbor don't like him.
That's sad.
Nobody
likes
them?
That's what just discussed
this afternoon. Did they stay like to themselves? Is that why? Oh.
Who said they nobody likes them? Which means nobody likes them. Why did they?
He just no one.
I shouldn't say we didn't like them.
Right. You just didn't know.
Right.
The
wife is very
nice.
Let me say, Danny, that he was supposed to. They thought he was in real estate. And was it you who said to me that would be a perfect cover because you could come and go at all odd hours and people would think you're showing homes, you know, to prospective buyers?
Well, here, sir, I want to start from the top. One of the things that I've done is I went through his background the best I could. And I looked up all of his properties. So I want to start with that he still owns a property that he paid cash for in 2012 in Florida. Okay. And I don't want to give up the address on air because I don't want to interfere with any ongoing investigation.
Sure. But
that seemed very strange to me. And then I looked up his property in Minneapolis, and I was able to go up and down the street using some software, checking out all the different homes. The home that he shows he lives in by record. Now, this is a home that he actually purchased with his wife. So him and his wife are on the transaction. They purchased the home in 2017, which seemed a little strange for me, okay, since they own a home in Florida that they paid cash for. I still can't understand how they came from Florida and how they got to Minneapolis. What is very strange is his wife had a radiology license, which is a doctor, and that was suspended in 2015. There's no explanation I can find on why. Then after being a radiologist, she moved to Florida and she became a realtor, and she works for a prominent real estate company there, and they bought this house. And I probably shouldn't say the name of the street, but I got to tell you, in looking at that video clip right there, that does not look like the street. When I saw the neighborhood, I saw a lot of rundown homes, and I don't remember seeing any green lawns like that. I'm going to have to go back and look at his house and backtrack and go up and down the street. But there was only a few houses on the street that he lived on. It was a much older neighborhood. So I'm not even sure what's going on in that video. I can't say for 100% that those were actually even his neighbors. I tried to look at the house on the right there to see if that was his house. The color looked right, but I couldn't see the property. But I at this point, I'm not even convinced on that video that's actually his neighborhood. I'd have to see a little more video and the homes that are next to him. But that home looked in awfully good condition compared to the neighborhood that I saw that he actually lives in and has his name on.
As you can see from the slide I have up now, George Floyd and the cop who kneed on his neck used to work security together. They overlapped security shifts at a South Minneapolis club. I have more information about it. The El Nuevo Rodeo Club, where Maya Santa Maria, who I take as the owner or the manager, the owner, said Chauvin worked as an off-duty officer at the club for 17 years. I mean, that's pretty damn peculiar, too, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, the thing that doesn't make any sense to me, and having actually a little experience with this nightclub situation, you know, the officers that work the area and constantly handle calls, the fight calls, the 415 calls that they're known as when you go to a nightclub, it doesn't make any sense that he would work there for several years, this George Floyd, and the officer would be one of the officers that frequently covered and made the arrests out of that club, and they did not know each other.
Oh, I'm sure they did know each other, Danny. It's highly implausible to claim they didn't, which, of course, makes it all the more suspicious, as though this indeed was a scripted event. And a point you were making before that not everyone could hear because of the audio coming from the video is that if a person is, you know, in need of medical attention lying on the street, you don't put him on a stretcher and take him elsewhere. You work on him right there in place. So if he was not breathing, they ought to have been performing CPR right there where he lay in the street.
I 100% agree with that, sir. You know, that's why investigations are everything. There's anomalies everywhere. The fact that that crew showed up, their uniform they were wearing was very interesting. They also almost had a police officer type uniform. I have to look into that. Maybe that's what they wear in that area. I've never been to that state. But the way that the gentleman checked his pulse and then did nothing, there was no, he didn't have his emergency bag in his hand. There was no equipment at all. Notice he didn't even try to flip him over at all. They went from that kind of side position where he checked his pulse and immediately picked him up and put him on the gurney. You know, that's not standard procedure, sir. That's not what happens. Immediately when he checked his pulse, he would have had his emergency bag and he would have put what's called an airbag on him that starts breathing for him, and they start forcing air into his lungs.
A mask over his nose and mouth, right?
Yes, it's a mask with a bag that they squeeze air into his lungs. They would have immediately started to resuscitate him. They wouldn't have picked him up life and limpless like that, thrown him on the gurney, and just thrown him in the back of the ambulance. They just don't do that, sir. There's no assessment by the paramedics there, and that makes absolutely no sense.
Danny, here's something that we've turned up about Derek Chauvin. It was the police officer who, they're using the word murdered. Well, he has been charged with third degree or with manslaughter, which is third degree murder is like manslaughter with a malevolent or reckless disregard. The restraint technique used by Chauvin was not part of the department's training. He's represented by Tom Kelly, the same attorney who got Officer Geronimo Yanez, who was involved in the death of Philando Castile, acquitted. Derek Chauvin was put on leave in 2011 for an inappropriate police shooting of Alaskan Native American Leroy Martinez. Chauvin shot Ira Latrell Tullis, an unarmed black 21-year-old man, in 2008. Chauvin was one of the officers who was responsible for the death of Wayne Rice, a Latino man, with 16 bullets forced into him. A total of 42 rounds were fired. Chauvin and another officer were chasing a car in 2005, which caused the death of three people, according to a Communities United Against Police Brutality. There are 12 police brutality complaints against Chauvin in the Minneapolis Office of Police Conduct complaint database. They are all listed as closed, non-public, and no discipline. Doesn't that strike you as very odd, all of that, Danny?
Sir, here's where I go off of the rails based on my investigation so far, okay? I call this particular document now, in my head, this is a red herring.
Okay.
Let me explain myself, sir. I've looked at some of their police procedures on paper. They actually are allowed to use their knee on the suspect in this department. It actually is part of their policy. So I don't believe this. This document, I believe, is a fabricated document. The reasons are none of this stuff that they're talking about is on official records. It's mainly a story that somebody wrote and printed, and I haven't been able to verify any of the names or anything on this story, including this officer. Well, his background is very shaky. I can't even find his law enforcement.
Danny, I take your point. I mean, suppose this is a fabricated document. Look at what it includes. The shooting of an Alaska Native American, the shooting of an unarmed black, the shooting of a Latino man with 16 bullets. I mean, this is like intended to incite a negative response from minorities across the country.
Yeah, during an ongoing investigation, sir, the police department would never, if you notice on the bottom of that document, it says confirmed by police spokesman John Elder. During an investigation, sir, where there's a death, there is no chance in heck, and you know the other word, there is no chance that they're going to release a document with this kind of information to the public. It's never going to happen. They're not going to do this, sir.
And Danny, another point you made early on that not everyone may have heard because of audio from the tape, being fired so promptly without a hearing or inquest, I mean, the Policeman Benevolent Association would never stand for that.
Sir, there is never a firing, okay? There is never a firing that fast. Officers are always placed on leave. Because it's very important for the audience to understand. There is always an incident and things that happen that are up to the event and then after the event. And every single thing has to be gone through to see what led up to this event. And let me give you just an example that we don't see. Okay, I'm just going to kind of throw this out there to kind of make everybody understand why the investigation leading up to the event is so important. When we see Derek kneeling on the suspect right now, if we didn't have any other video or anything else, which we do have now, if we didn't, how would we know that the suspect, for one, is even cuffed? You don't even know that because you can't see the cuffs right now. Number two, how do we know he did not produce a weapon, a knife, or a gun and was thrown on the ground and they were in a life or death struggle and just remove the gun from them. You see, we don't even know that. And that happens quite often around the country to where there was a deadly struggle with a suspect. And it took all hands on and extreme force because the suspect himself just tried to use deadly force. Now, we know in this case, he did not do that. But you can't jump to conclusions until you look at the entire event from the very first point of contact to the absolute end in every single detail. And that's why there is never, never a firing. The police union gets involved. They have their own investigators that represent the officer that look at every single thing. And I'd like to cite several other incidences like this in the past where an investigation was done, including Ferguson, and we found out the whole thing was bogus to set up a riot, and the officers were all cleared and did nothing wrong after we got the full picture of what happened. As a matter of fact, we found many cases where the media hides video and they hide details that they don't want the public to know because they want to keep the story going for a political objective.
Danny, I'm showing now two slides that came from Henry Mackow's site. He's asking whether the knee on the neck is not Israeli training. As you well know, many U.S. of a police force are being sent to Israel for training where they treat them. They instruct them how to treat American citizens the way the Israeli police treat Palestinians, which, of course, is with brutality and inhumanity. Do you know whether that knee on the neck is derivative? I've never heard of that from American police forces in the past, but I certainly believe it would be an Israeli tactic.
Yeah, I can't comment on that, sir. I don't know anything about how they train or what their tactics are. But I do know when you're trying to control a suspect, sir, depending on the circumstances, again, I want you to, if you look at that picture that you have there with the suspect on the ground and the officer on top of him, okay, just by looking at that picture without all the supporting video that I've seen, the first thing that would go through my mind was, is the suspect even cuffed? Did he have a weapon? Does he have a gun in his pocket? Are they struggling to get a gun out of his pocket right now? I don't even know what's going on. Now, I do know because I've seen supported video after this happened that has answered a lot of questions, and I'm hoping we can get to one of those videos here pretty quick.
But well, I see it, Danny, and whether I have it here, I can tell you. You see the suspect being cuffed and taken over to the street. He sits down with his back against the wall. There doesn't seem to be anything contentious. He's being totally cooperative. He's a very big guy. He might even be 6'5", 300 pounds. He's a big guy. Now, here's another from Henry Mackow's site. Something fishy about this murder. Remember, the Kobe death was a coronavirus signal. Here he is. He's wearing a shirt that says, "I can't breathe," as are two others in the background. Danny, I never heard of that before. And here's a George Floyd Corona photo op, meaning he's standing beside Corona Bear, which I happen to like myself. And strange the way the EMTs didn't check his vitals, but just threw him in the ambulance, which is a point you've made already more than once.
Yeah, the whole "I can't breathe" thing is something they've started back with other suspects. And, you know, that's just a political narrative. When I first heard that video of Officer Chafin kneeling on him, and I heard the suspect yelling out, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe," I immediately reflected back to the other events. You know, it's very common when you hear suspects all over the country that are being arrested, that are black. When you cuff them and start to arrest them, they'll just start yelling out, "I can't breathe," even when they're walking, even when they're cuffed. It's just a thing. It's a phrase that's overused. They say it all the time. And it really reminded me that this thing was scripted when immediately the suspect started yelling out, "I can't breathe," before they even started choking him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what strikes me, too, is you and I and Scott Bennett have investigated the Kobe crash, and it was staged. It was also fake. So that, you know, here we have Kobe maybe ran into somebody in Ohio, according to a report. He was very pissed off about it. I'm very troubled he's wearing this sweatshirt saying I can't breathe. Clearly, he's a much more political figure than I have heretofore surmised.
Well, the NBA is highly controlled. When the Trayvon Martin thing came out and we found out how fake that was in the end, and I'm not even sure at this point if that wasn't scripted as well. You know, they were the basketball team in Florida, the Miami Heat, were taking pictures with shirts that said, I can't breathe. You know, before they even had the facts, before there was even an investigation to know what was going on, the NBA is used as a political weapon. They do this over and over and over again. To me, almost the NBA is part of Operation Mockingbird. It's like they get something to say and they all chime in and go together.
Now, Danny, here we have a KSTP 5 eyewitness reporter. That's a local television station in Minneapolis, was caught playing fake gunshots on his cell phone at the Minneapolis protest and then blame it on black people. When confronted, he admitted and acted like he didn't know it would be a problem. I mean, that's pretty pathetic.
Yeah, there's fake news going in all over. The problem is, you know, I'm not on the ground. I do have a contact that is on the ground that is monitoring pretty close. And there's so much chaos going on right now, it's really hard to decide what is real and what is being hyped up. It's mass confusion, and we're going to have to wait for the smoke to clear to look at the different incidences on an individual basis, which I will be doing, running all of the stuff down
now,
to try and pick apart and find out what's real and what's not real.
Now, look at this slide, Danny. This guy dressed all in black with an umbrella beside a kid wearing a pink shirt. He was earlier walking beside him carrying a pizza box. He was using a hammer to smash windows. And it looked as though he and the kid had a bit of a tussle earlier on, but here they're clearly beside each other. And he appears to be an agent provocateur, trying to, you know, make matters worse by smashing windows of cars virtually at random.
Well, I would just like to say this, sir. One of my contacts that I spoke to yesterday, that's a very high level on this thing that's starting to investigate this, he told me that they've already spotted buses in town, that they believe George Soros is busing in provocateurs, Black Lives Matter, from out of the state.
And that's exactly what he did in Charlottesville, Danny. George Soros brought in Antifa and Black Lives Matter people on the same buses. I mean, it was that bad, that obvious. They're all being paid.
Yes, and that we had clear evidence of that, where we actually had video and people walking into the buses and catching the provocateurs, or the agents, if you want to call them, getting off and on the buses. And we actually have that evidence. I don't have the pictures or the video yet, but I was actually told by somebody on the ground yesterday that they found the buses, and they are busing people from out of state, you know, call them professional provocateurs, Black Lives Matter agents. You know, you can give them a bunch of different names or labels, but we have evidence now that this is taking place.
Absolutely stunning. And here's another photograph put on Twitter. Well, you see, one of the protesters actually has an earpiece, Danny. He's obviously being coordinated.
Yeah, by looking at that picture, sir, I don't recognize anything with his hand over his face yet. But, you know, the thing about the coordination is you have to be careful about that. The police department, even the National Guard, has been known to put people into the crowd to blend in, to feed reports to law enforcement. So just by looking at that picture right there of the gentleman with the hoodie and the sweatshirt, I could not say if that was law enforcement feeding information or if that was a provocateur at that point.
But you do see the wire coming out of his ear here, right, Danny? I'm circling it here.
Absolutely, sir. But I want to tell you, it's a known tactic for law enforcement, okay, and even the National Guard, to put several people into a hostile crowd where they have to take action. This is a trained tactic where they'll put an agent or an officer in there. They will dress them up like the locals that are carrying out the damage or the crime, to go blend in the best they can and feed reports back on who is who and exactly what's going on. the term is basically, they call them law enforcement observers, and that's exactly what that could be. I can't say for sure.
And Danny, when you put together the circumstances within which this is occurring, it appears to me this is a Democratic campaign stunt resorting to racism as a desperate last measure. They're going to try to spin it to blame it on Trump. I don't think they'll have any success. But let me mention several of the factors that lead me to that conclusion. Here, the whole coronavirus fakery is falling apart. It turns out that the probability of dying from all causes is 0.87, approximately 0.9. But the probability of dying from COVID-19, this was as of May 16th, was 0.02. In other words, it's very unlikely you're going to die from COVID. In fact, on a previous report I did with Dean Ryan and Mike Barra, we explained how new reports are showing that for an adult, you're as likely to die from coronavirus as you have or from dying from being hit by a car. And for children, it's even more remote. It's equal to the prospect of dying from being hit by lightning. Here's another tweet about it. The world's population is 7,782,797,552, while COVID-19 deaths, 265,238, or 0.003% of the world's population. And yet, this is what the world has stopped for. I mean, it's completely absurd, Danny. And then we have, I think this may have been the initial precipitating event. You have Joe Biden saying that if you don't vote for me, you're not black. Listen to this. It's completely absurd.
If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump and you ain't black.
Biden apologized for saying black voters ain't black. If they are still undecided between him and Trump, I shouldn't have been such a wise guy, he says. Biden was interviewed on the morning of May 22nd by Charlemagne the God on the nationally syndicated radio show The Breakfast Club.
You know, thank you so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to black media.
I can't do that to white media and black media because my wife has to go on at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump and you ain't black.
It don't have nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the fact I want something for my community. I would love to see
you. Take a look at my record, man. I extended the voting rights 25 years. I have a record that is second to none. The NAACP has endorsed me every time I've run. Come on. Take a look at the record.
All right, thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Anyway, thanks. I will come back.
Biden later apologized for his remark on a call with the U.S. Black Chamber, a group that helps support black entrepreneurship. I should not have been so cavalier. I've never, never, ever taken the African-American community for granted.
He said what I believe a lot of black voters, including myself, feel, and that's that Democrats take black voters for granted. You know, votes are quid pro quo, right? It's not like I don't want to vote. I just want to know what candidates will do for us and exchange for our votes. The same way young progressive Latinos, the LGBT community.
Absolutely.
We want the same thing. Do you feel like black people are owed that from the Democratic Party?
Absolutely.
Simon Sanders, senior advisor to Biden, said his comment was in jest. He was making the distinction that he would put his record with the African American community up against Trump's any day, period. In a Trump-Biden matchup, 81% of black voters said they would vote for Biden. 3% said they'd vote for Trump. According to a Quinnipiac University poll released on May 20th, now this.
If you have a poll.
I don't know, Danny, that's ludicrous because there were polls right before in December, before the coronavirus, showing up to 40% of blacks were going to support Trump. because he's actually benefited. The surging community actually has raised all boats. In this case, the lowest paid workers were seeing the highest rate of increase in their wages. And because he was curtailing immigration across our southern borders, they were losing their jobs to even more low-wage workers who had undercut them. In addition to all that, we have a new report that the director of national intelligence has call records between Seth Rich and WikiLeaks, which suggests that John Brennan, CIA, was more involved than we thought. In other words, the Russian hacking narrative is falling completely apart. Here's a wonderful graph. U.S. presidents and the wars. We got Ronald Reagan, and there are six or seven. You got George H.W. Bush. You got five or six. You got Bill Clinton. You got three. George W. Bush. You got five. You got Barack Obama. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Then you have Donald Trump. Zero. Zero, Danny. And get this, get this. I got this from the DNC. James were shocked. We thought people were horrified by Trump's recent job performance, but Gallup is reporting that his approval rating is up to 49%. This can't be right. How can his numbers be that high? How could we be so wrong? So today we are conducting our own nationwide poll to check these numbers, and as a top Democrat in Wisconsin, your response is crucial. James, do you approve of Donald Trump? And of course, when I've answered to these at all, I have said emphatically, yes, I do. I mean, Danny, I think the Democrats are desperate enough to pull off this complete nonsense. And look how they don't care about the American people. They don't care about the economy. They don't even care about killing people or trashing businesses in Minneapolis by deliberately provoking a riot. I find this disgraceful beyond belief.
Well, sir, you know, I agree with you. But just to recap that for the audience, you know, the Democrats were taking quite a beating the last 2 weeks with Richard Grenell doing all of the D-class from on the Spygate stuff. The fact that Obama knew the whole time that Trump was being spied on was coming out. The names were coming out. What really was hitting them hard, though, sir, were the stories that were coming out and the arrests, the actual arrests and admissions of guilt in court of the voting fraud. They were losing the narrative that they've been trying to push for the mail-in ballots. And stories are surging from all over the nation of massive, massive voter fraud, arrests being made from a postman that was changing ballots, from an official that was stuffing ballot boxes who admitted in court he was doing it to change the results of the election for the Democrats. This news was spreading very quickly. They were losing control. And then when Biden came up with his major slip up, and telling the black community that they don't know how to think for themselves and that they're not black if they don't vote Democrat. I can tell you that was being discussed in the black community all over the United States. They needed to stop the bleeding. They needed to change the channel. They needed the media to talk about something else. So what did we get? We got this current event that we're talking about in Minnesota, and this is very common. They've done this with the false flag shootings. We've caught them. We've investigated those in the past. This is no different. They had to cook up something to get people in the community to talk about racism again. They use racism as a weapon. That is their number one go-to weapon, to use that to cover up things that they don't like. And it's very, very obvious what's going on here, sir.
Well, this is also incredibly shabby. I want everyone to know that Danny and I are taking calls the second hour. The number to reach Mitchell, 540-352-4452. I repeat, 542-352-4452. Call in, Mitchell, field your call. He may have to call you back, and we'll get you on the air with Danny and me. We're about to hit our break, but Danny, you've just been doing a super job with all of this. Is there anything you'd like to squeeze in before we hit the time control interruption? Go.
Yeah, what I would like to say, sir, is on the coronavirus. They were losing the coronavirus narrative. We know the whole thing is a scam, but the numbers are even worse. I'm starting to call this coronavirus a racist virus, and here's why I call it. If you look at all the Republican states, the red states, you look at Idaho, Utah, Montana, Wyoming, you're talking, there's nobody sick. There's no deaths. There's nothing going on. Why is this happening in just heavy Democrat cities like New York, Seattle, San Francisco? Is this virus picking on Democrats? I've never seen a virus that searches Democrats out like this.
Hey, Danny, I got a good one for you. This just came out today. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison deletes a 2018 tweet of himself holding up the Antifa handbook saying, "I just found the book that strikes fear in the heart of Donald Trump." They got the Attorney General involved in this whole thing. It looks to me like the whole state is corrupt and involved in this. I'm beginning to believe that Democrats are absolutely corrupt from A to Z, from top to bottom, Danny. I'm embarrassed that in the past I voted for Bill Clinton twice and for Barack Obama twice. By God, that's a mistake I'm not going to make again. This is shocking.
Well, the fact that the governor, the mayor, and the police department allowed this riot to go on as long as they did, and they didn't get it under control very quickly, they're all in on it, sir. They've all stood down on this. They've all allowed this to develop to the point. It's almost like it was scripted. I've never seen a governor and a mayor stand down and do nothing for such a long period of time and allow property damage to happen when it easily could have been avoided. It makes zero sense, sir.
Well, Danny, I think you got it right. It's as though it were scripted, because it was scripted. I'm very glad to have you here, Danny. You've been all over this. We've got callers calling in already, and I can't wait to get them on the line with you and me. Meanwhile, I want everyone to take a deep breath and recognize this. It looks like it's a whole nother scam, and we're getting better and better at cracking these immediately. So many have caught on to what it takes to blow these things apart. It's happening almost instantaneously. We'll be right back with Danny and me and our callers. Stand by.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take
the future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Danny, I'm not surprised that we already have four callers lined up. I want to mention, by the way, during the break, I spoke with Dean Ryan, who's in L.A., with whom I do these daily updates about the coronavirus. We've done it for over 2 months now, meaning we've done over 60 of these daily updates, and he's been all over this, too, and he's just identified the woman who was allegedly attacked by the rioters as a crisis actor. He has the photographs, more confirmation. This is all complete and total bullshit, a Democratic political stunt to distract from the fact that they are in a calamitous situation and facing a prospective landslide defeat. Let me take our first caller, Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, join us right here.
Good evening, gentlemen. Excellent first hour. It's impressive that Danny applies his police training and investigative training to this situation. And my first statement is that none of the past events and schemes of the last 3 years are operating in a vacuum. They're all related to each other and promulgated by the same small minority of psychopaths. But that's my general statement. And first, I thought it was very impressive that Danny completely proved that the George Floyd event was staged. I mean, I thought so immediately, and it's just unbelievable to hear that phony mayor crying the crocodile tears. And it's like he took a high school acting class, and now he's a great emotive actor. What a phony.
Giuseppe, I tell you, watching that thing, I just resonate with Robbie Parker. I mean, it was so fake.
Couldn't agree more. And the other idea is that you I had written it down when I was listening, but you had already said it. But I want to reinforce that the whole collapse of this scamdemic, this blowing up a flu season into a worldwide deadly pandemic is just insane. And what's so disturbing is the media is so corrupt, so fake, so propagandistic that for a day or two, the rioting, the George Floyd op is going to knock the coronavirus and the vaccine issue off the front, the headlines. But in reality, there's still, here in Northern Virginia, today was the first day where they're partially opening up, but they're still telling you to wear masks. They're not opening up the summer pools. They're not opening up the summer concerts. And it's just the effing flu. It's as phony as the day is long. So,
and it's so damaging to the quality of life of every American. I mean, they're depriving us of experiences we can never recover. This is a permanent loss, not to mention the economy and all that. I mean, everything about it is catastrophic. And I got to tell you, the Democrats were right in there pitching. They want to drag this lockdown as long as they can because they think it's going to help them defeat Trump. Well, I got news for them. It ain't going to work. They're complete idiots. And the whole country is going to despise the Democrats. They are going to lose so many votes because of this. And in addition, Giuseppe, we're going to have 100 million new conspiracy theorists who've seen through this bullshit.
It's starting to happen. And the interesting thing is that the if you step back and you look at who is fomenting all this, it's the globalist parasites. It's the 0.0001%. And I don't think they really hate Trump. In fact, I think in many ways they control him. But they really hate the fact that this majority of whites, blacks, Latinos, sensible people in the working and middle classes banded together to vote him in because the Hillary Clinton was such an obvious war agenda and destroy the working and middle class even more than they have been. That and what's sad about the Democratic Party is that it's no longer Democratic. In fact, there's a great line a fella on another talk show uses podcast. He goes, "I hate Trump, but I hate the people who hate Trump more because, you know, the Republicans have always served the wealthy. That's just their niche. But the Democrats, when I was a young boy and when you were a young man, Professor, they served the working class. They served people who had living wage jobs and didn't need to have a master's degree or what have you. And that's all been stolen. And that is essentially the people who are running all these ops are these weaponized psychopathic minorities, the billionaires, the LGBTQ mentally ill, the Zionist mentally ill, the Bolshevik mentally ill. You'd think that, I've said this before, that based on the mass media, you'd think that 80% of the population was gay. It's 3%. You'd think that 90%, I know it adds up to more than 100%, were Jewish. It's about 2%. And yet these weaponized minorities have taken control of this once great nation.
And Giuseppe, when Trump executed a hostile takeover of the GOP, he actually gave it a populist twist. This is not the Republican Party of the past. This is a new Trump version, and it's very, very different. And Trump clearly is concerned to benefit the American people. I know he's not ignoring the upper class, but he's doing a lot of good things for Americans, including calling out the fake news media. I want you to stand by, Giuseppe, as I bring in other callers to come back to you. 805 area code. Give us your name and your state, please. 805.
This is Chase calling in from California. And first off, the show has been excellent. And how the heck do you follow Giuseppe? It's just not fair. It really isn't fair. Okay. So I will say this, after looking into this myself, and listening to other people, I saw that I think it's this Hennepin County Medical Examiner has found no physical findings that support a diagnosis of traumatic exilia or strangulation. And that's as of the 26th. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that's apparently what's out there. So, I mean, here we are looking to an autopsy.
Of the alleged victim, George Floyd?
That is correct, yes.
That there's no finding he was asphyxiated?
Exactly. Or strangulation, it says, and I quote.
So what is he supposed to have died from if he's actually even dead, which I frankly doubt?
Well, that's just it. I mean, these guys work at the same club.
The cop that supposedly
just squatted on this guy looking straight into a camera the whole time, knowing he's being recorded, doesn't stop. Doesn't even say anything like, hey, quit moving or anything to try to give him some sort of out of resisting arrest.
Right.
Really?
Right.
And then, by the way, this guy's cops got the size of arms of my four-year-old boy. I mean, what kind of cop has scrawny arms like that? That's interesting.
A friend of mine from Cleveland, Jeff, made that very same point. He said that's the scrawniest cop he's ever seen. That's very peculiar. Danny, did you notice that?
I did, sir. He definitely, that is true about his physique. But, you know, I agree with your overall, the way you brought that together. And, that you know, that first caller really nailed it as well. But there's a lot of anomalies in that video. I want people to look at the license plate on the car. The license plate on the car says police. You know, that is something that you would see in Hollywood. I can tell you right now that police cars' license plates say government vehicle on them, and then there's a number. They don't drive around with police license plates that say police. And I would challenge anybody that lives in the state to come back on your show and tell us, what are all the license plates say in the area? And the fact that we get the one vehicle where the choking took place and the license plate says police on it, it says this entire thing was scripted from top to bottom. I don't believe any of it, sir.
Chase, you may be following Giuseppe, but you're making a lot of good points. Add a couple more before I turn to the next caller, but you're welcome to stay on the line.
Thank you, Mr. Fetzer. I did have another thing to ask. I noticed his badge, the officer in question's badge, was tilted off on an angle.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's easy to do. I've never been an officer of the law, but is that an easy thing that happened? And if so, was there an altercation that arose before this? I have not seen any, I don't know. I saw blood coming from the man's face, from Floyd's face. Was there a fight that ensued? I don't know. Do we know?
Danny.
All right, we haven't shown the video yet, but I'm going to just go back for a minute to say he was handcuffed across the street 10 minutes before this choking, or maybe even longer. He was walked under control. His behavior was a little erratic because he was being arrested. And what I believe that happened before this is he had something in his pocket looked like he was trying to get rid of, and the arresting officer, as he picked him up off the ground, he picked up the item and put it in his own pocket. And there's no audio, and I couldn't really see it because it was obscured, whatever he picked up. But as he walked him over to the police car where he is now, they walked up to the driver's side. Now, it's important to point out that the police car is parked on the wrong side of the street. So the steering wheel is actually on the curb side. And they walk right up to the passenger door behind the driver's side. I see the door open, and they're actually getting ready to put the suspect in the back of the car, and he falls straight down in front of the rear door, and then the film cuts out. Then we see this cell phone footage that shows up and has a different set of officers in it. Now, I want to point that out, sir. The two arresting officers from across the street are now missing from the cell phone footage. They're nowhere to be seen. These are the two that maintain custody, actually placed them into custody and made the arrest. And then when we cut to the cell phone footage, the suspect is on the wrong side of the car, sir. How did the suspect go from the driver's side passenger to around the back of the car when he was cuffed into the traffic, onto the ground, and up against the tire? There's no way to explain this movement, how he got there, based on the footage that we have that led up to this moment. To me, it looks like this is a completely scripted event where they placed the person on the ground, got on top of them, got into this choking position, and then they started to roll the footage with the ongoers. It makes no sense at all when you analyze all of the footage that is available up to this point.
Well, Chase, you stand by while I bring in our next caller, who I'm confident is going to agree emphatically with you, Brew from Chicago. Come on in, Brew.
Hello. It's difficult to know where to start because there was just so much and so little time. But let's just say that, you know, as it's been mentioned, the governor, the mayor, the police chief, Donald Trump, Ivanka Trump, they're all just in on it, going along. You got all the media and all the regular players stepping up, Al Sharpton, Colin Kaepernick, they're all in on the game, you know, pushing the narrative and so on and so forth. Now let's talk about the mayor of Minneapolis when they he put out a statement, anybody that's within 5 hours of the city, come on in and protest. Now, basically what he was making a call, because now what we know, it's not a protest. It is a looting of the city. They're burning. They're destroying property. There's all sorts of nefarious activity because it's a madhouse now. You got kidnapping going on. You got people probably being raped, hurt, maimed, all sorts of things happening here. It is what basically the Minneapolis mayor called out for was a fire sale. We have a fire sale in Minneapolis. They are tearing down Minneapolis for reconstruction. It is Somalia. They claimed the state of Minnesota as Somalia. It is now theirs. They are they're destroying it for reconstruction to make it in their image. Then you have the police chief who turns around and says, I don't recognize any of these people. They don't seem to be from around here because this is pre-planned. This is more planned than just 2 weeks or a month. They've had this in their pocket, ready to go. It was scheduled and so on. Plandemic, this, that, a whole series of things going on. And then you have George Soros involved, busing them in just like Charlottesville, Ferguson, any one of these the abortion rallies and so on and so forth. They just bust these people in and they lead the controlled opposition. How do they do it? They lead the opposition as well as whatever. So they're controlling both narratives. Bruce, but anyway, again,
I think you put on Skype in a message to me that George Soros owns many of the properties that are being trapped.
Hold on. Okay. Yes. He is heavily invested. I don't know how much ownership he has of Target, but he is heavy invested. I don't know how much ownership he has of those auto parts stores that got burnt down, but he is heavily invested. Now, what's on the back end of this? Look, the economy's down, so on and so forth. The whole world's in pandemic. They're getting people to do online sales now. Hey, what better, you know, just like Silverstein, let's take down the buildings. He gets an insurance policy. What about George Soros? On the back end, he's getting insurance policy as well. But the question is, do they have an insurance policy against rioting and whatever? I don't know. But they probably do. It's George Soros. They probably got it all covered. They're all in bed together. So I that's my assumption. I just put that in there. I'm alleging that. It's a possibility, just like Silverstein doubling the price of the World Trade Center, doubling the price of his insurance policy just before all this stuff happened. You know, so, but anyway, they're in control of this narrative. And again, here we got Donald Trump once again involved in these hoaxes. He played along with Las Vegas. He played along with...
I got to tell you, I don't believe a word of that. I don't think Trump's involved in Las Vegas. I don't think he's involved in Minneapolis. And you're entitled to your opinion. I'm just asserting nonsense.
Well, let me defend that. He has the utmost intelligence agencies at his fingertips, the FBI. He has the CIA. He has NSA. He doesn't, no one said, hey, Donald, point out anything that Danny's pointed out tonight.
Bruce.
That nobody's pointed this out to him, but yet he's going on TV.
Bruce. Have you been ignoring that the NSA and the CIA have been working against them, the DOJ and the FBI, for God's sake? Pull your head out from where the sun doesn't shine.
Well, you don't have to yell at me, Jim.
Ridiculous.
I'm just presenting stuff.
But I think what you're presenting now is nonsense.
Okay. Danny, please chime in. Take Brew off.
I'll have Danny respond. I don't want Brew. I'm going to bring in Paul. Paul, come on in.
You know, I got to say, it may come as a surprise to you, Jim, and maybe to Brew, but I have to take your side with this, Professor. I certainly believe that Trump has access to some sorts of knowledge, but for the most part, you know, he's handled more or less. I mean, he's got people that make a schedule, tell him where to go, what to do, you know, set up his meetings. He's not doing that all himself. And it's a busy day. Come on. I mean, here's the thing. People like us wouldn't know these things without these sorts of shows. So I had my suspicion about this event. My mind was completely opened up in that first hour. Excellent job, Danny, I got to say.
And it's the kind of things, it's the kind of points that we wait for, that we go to websites. You know, I'll typically check multiple websites, including Miles Mathis. Sometimes he'll post a paper. Sometimes he won't. Sometimes he'll have guests. I'm waiting for the next few days. He's probably going to have a paper on this, and he's going to point out many of these same anomalies. But so you got to ask yourself the question, does Trump or any of these other politicians, do they do that? Do they have access to it? Do people tell them to do it? I don't know. I doubt it, because you have to have a sort of mindset to go in this direction. I mean, as much as we like to say, as much as Trump likes to say fake news and so forth, there's still a heavy reality bias for television and television news in all of us. You can't escape it.
This op is democratic from top to bottom. And I find it just ridiculous that Brew, who is a very smart guy and is usually right about these things, should be so grossly wrong. Donald Trump would not stoop to this. This is Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer. This is George Soros. This is the Democratic governors. This is this guy who is the Attorney General of Minnesota who loves Antifa. This is the quality of the lowlifes who are bringing us this complete rubbish and trashing Minnesota, which I tell you right now, after this is going to go red. I don't have any doubt whatsoever after this incredible stunt that Minnesota is going to go very powerfully for Donald Trump.
Can I get a couple more minutes here, Jim, before you go on the next caller?
Let me bring in Danny first, Paul, and then I'll come back to you, Danny.
You know, sir, I want to be careful how I recap this, but I want your listeners and those two callers, and including that gentleman, Paul, that was kind of, you know, saying about Trump.
That was Brew, not Paul. Brew.
Okay, Brew. Okay, if you're listening to me and you can hear me, I got to be careful how I say this. As of yesterday, I can tell you 100%, or if there was such a thing, and please listen to me closely, 1,000% that President Donald Trump is not in on this. Not only is he not in on this, there are details I know. There's an on-the-ground investigation taking place right now that I know of to find out what's going on. There's observers on the ground. Donald Trump, President Trump, tweeted yesterday that he was going to call in the National Guard. He said that the mayor was standing it down and allowing the damage to happen. So all I'm telling you, there's other details about this investigation that I'm not going to let out at this time.
Yeah.
But I can tell you 100%, 1,000%, that Donald Trump is a very smart man. He has investigators all around him, okay? He's got his eyes all over this, and we will get to the bottom. And 100%, I can tell you, Dr. Fetzer, I agree, this is a 100% deep state, George Soros, Democrat operation. The details are everywhere. They're unmistakable. They're loud and clear. There's no other way to explain it.
I agree with you 100%. Paul, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes, and we got another caller, Bruce from Texas, I'm going to bring in. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, thank you. At least 2 to 3 minutes. I appreciate it. So I'm going to go where many listeners and you more than likely expect me to go, and I'm going to try not to disappoint given my history here. I'm going to come at this from my German National Socialist inclination. So let's take a look at this guy, Jacob Frey, the mayor. Okay, this is right from Wikipedia. This is where I do my deep research. Here's what it says. Frey is a Reformed Jew, and he attends two Reformed synagogues in Minneapolis, Temple Israel and Shir Tikvah. Now, here's another thing that's interesting about this man, who's only been mayor since January 2nd, 2018. That's when he sworn in after he won the election in 2017. The guy's a young punk. I mean, basically, he only moved to Minneapolis from 2009, and he came from Virginia. Now, I don't know much about the two different states, but I'm assuming that Virginia is maybe a little nicer area to live in than Minneapolis. I don't know, but he's from Virginia, okay? And he moves to Minneapolis in 2009, and all of a sudden in 2017, he's mayor? I mean, I don't know. And he appoints the black police chief. So we got a Jewish mayor, a black police chief, and who could be surprised if this kind of nonsense goes on? But here's another thing that's interesting.
And you got an Antifa-loving attorney general who is a radical in his youth.
Right.
here's another couple of interesting things from, you know, the wiki page. He's big on the whole climate change thing, right? And he organized this big event for gays in Minneapolis, you know. So does that make him gay? No, supposedly he's married. But what heterosexual man is pushing for and behind and organizing some gay event? Well, that's the mayor of Minneapolis. So
go ahead. He's a Midwest version of Robbie Parker. I guarantee 100% he's a fake.
Right. So there's absolutely no reason at all for these victims of history to have earned the moniker down to the centuries of nation wreckers and culture destroyers. It's just an accident. All right, now I'm going to finish in 30 to 40 seconds. This was going to be what I was going to say at first to have a little humor before Brew went off on his thing. And this is going to be in response to Chase, if you're still listening, Chase. You came on and you said, you don't know how you can follow Giuseppe from D.C. I'm here. Here's what I would suggest, Chase. I would start out with 100 to 200 push-ups a day, do 20 to 25 in sets, okay? Maybe walk a mile or two a day, as I do. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you an autographed picture with a little, you know, encouragement. It's going to say, you can do it, Chase. And then also I'll send you some links with archives of my calls to internet radio going back to 2017. You just practice and rehearse, Chase. Keep doing it. I know you can.
Nice, Paul. I want to bring back Giuseppe for just a sec, and also Chase, before I turn to Bruce in Texas. Giuseppe.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see much difference between the quality of my statements and Chase. I think we're all bringing really salient points to the discussion. And I would just like to observe that the quality of these false flag ops is getting worse and worse. You look at how bad the New Zealand mosque thing was, and now you look at how bad this event in Minneapolis is. It's so sad that the mind controllers are so confident in the entrainment of the normie that they don't even sweat the details anymore. They use a guy who's like a real actor knows to never look into the camera. You're playing a part. You don't look in the camera. So this is just some guy who's not even a good crisis actor. And it's just getting worse and worse.
Those are great, great points, Giuseppe. Chase, you want to add a few words?
Yeah, well, first off, thanks for the pep talk, guys. You're really humbling. I do want to say that I don't know if you guys follow Candace Owens. She said some good stuff, said some bad stuff. But along the lines of what I was bringing up with the the cause of death. She just posted actually saying that. I'll read it if I can. It says, "So what's everyone's thoughts now that the medical examiner's office has concluded that George Floyd didn't die of strangulation or asphyxiation, but of a heart condition complicated by intoxicants in the body?" And I wonder if that goes back to when the Asian cop said, "Don't do drugs." Do you guys recall that at all?
No, he may have said that. Yeah, go ahead.
I was thinking that maybe he did die of maybe a drug overdose, perhaps self-induced heart attack.
How could the knee on the neck have not been a contributing factor, however, because it's going to deprive your heart of oxygen? I mean, it's going to aggravate any vascular condition you have. You know, I mean, it's not good for you regardless, but it's fascinating you bring that out. I'm real glad you added that. Is there more you want to contribute right now?
Yeah, I might be able to add that, you know, the cop was fairly slim, and this gentleman, as you mentioned, he was probably 6'3", 6'5", I think you said.
Yeah.
And maybe not in the right position. I don't know how long those other cops were there because they're kind of the cars in the way from the video that I saw.
Yeah.
But perhaps that might lead into why he felt he needed to apply pressure. I'm just speculating.
Well, there were like four cops there from the beginning, and then more showed up. Let me turn to Bruce in Texas. Bruce, go ahead. Join the conversation.
Yeah, I'm going to be short because the guys took up all my talking points. But I guess they're all converging here. Like I said before, I used to be a EMT paramedic, and when I see bad patient care going on, that kind of raises a red flag. Now, maybe it is an organic event, you know, and there are city operations, especially in the bigger towns, that have a bigger union and more of a incompetent leadership up in City Hall that there are incompetent paramedics. But I haven't seen the video but once. Are you telling me that there was no CPR done? There was no intubation?
Yeah, no CPR at all. Yeah.
You know, I got a rule of thumb here that it's not guaranteed, but it sends you in the right direction. If you have an event like Sandy Hook or Boston or this last one, and it's a liberal establishment with Jewish hierarchy up above it, you can pretty much start thinking that it may be a false flag or at least a provoked event. If it's overseas and if it involves the foreign policy agenda of the neocons in Israel, such as the tankers in the Persian Gulf last year, then you can start looking at the Republicans are responsible for that. But that's all I got to say. I'll let the other guys go on.
That's good. Bruce, that's all very good. That's all very good, Bruce. Danny, okay. Danny, back to you, Danny.
Well, Dr. Fetzer, you know, that's very astute what he said. But there's so many protocols being broken. And what I try to focus on, as you know, is the evidence. I try not to speculate. You know, I look at documents, I look at video, and I track the evidence. And the evidence shows there's nothing that makes sense here. There were two large officers that arrested him. They had him under complete control. He was walking calmly to the police car. They leaned him up the car. They leaned him up against the door. They opened the door. He goes to the ground, but that he magically ends up on the other side of the car up against the tire. There's no way that could have happened. He was cuffed completely. The fact that the ambulance shows up and the paramedic reaches down on his throat to check his pulse. He doesn't have he doesn't have his emergency bag with him. He doesn't lay him flat. He doesn't even try to lay him flat on his back to assess whether he's breathing or anything. They pick him up limpless, throw him on the gurney, and shove him in the back of the truck with no concern at all. Those aren't even, I would argue that those are even real paramedics. They didn't try to incubate him. They didn't try to give him air. They didn't check his breathing. They just picked him up and threw him on the gurney and threw him in the back of the truck like it was already a dead body. That makes zero sense, sir. This is looking phonier by the minute when you watch it. It looks bad. It looks like bad Hollywood acting. Every single protocol by every professional that was on the scene was broken. It makes no sense, the behavior of any of the professionals that were on the ground.
This is interesting. Mr. Rowe, who also has a show here on Revolution Radio, has sent Mitchell an image suggesting that one of the cops at the Boston bombing and one of the state police at Sandy Hook and this guy who had his knee were played by one and the same crisis actor. And I got to say, superficially, the resemblance is striking. I'd like to bring in Mitchell, too, to add his thoughts, because I know he has been reflecting on this. Mitchell, what would you like to add?
Well, I guess I'd like to add the mass psychology of all of this. The rage and violence versus the real protesting. I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Just because, you know, so many people show so little empathy for their neighbors and their community. Yet when something like this happens, you know, they're ready to riot. So
it looks like the riot psychology was engineered that Soros bust him in like he did at Charlottesville, and the whole thing was provoked. We had this guy in the black outfit with the black umbrella who's going around smashing car windows with a hammer, and it looks as though the fires were being deliberately set. So I think this is very much an orchestrated event that was deliberately provoked, and George Soros appears to have had a heavy hand here. Let me bring in Bill from Australia, who's now discovered how to reach you, Mitch, which I'm glad. Bill, add your thoughts. Bill, are you there? Mitchell, do we have him or no?
We had him. Let me see if he dropped.
Let me go back to Danny. Danny, your further thoughts.
Yeah, he drops.
The way the government officials here are standing it down and letting this get out of control makes so no sense. I'd like to draw attention to the press conferences as well. The mayor, that one caller made a good point about the mayor being for Virginia. The mayor, his lack of experience in leadership is out of control. President Trump actually called him out for his leadership. There's no mayor in the country, sir, from a big city or a small city, that would invite a riot and not try to calm the situation. The words that he's using, he's almost inviting people to partake in violence. There's been no word from him about how a criminal investigation will be handled. You know, he's not saying, I'm urging the public to please be calm. Let us do our investigation so we can get all the facts and find out what happens. You know, the officers have been taken off in three. You know, he's not doing any of the things that a mayor would do to keep the
public. And I'll add to that, Jim.
Instead, he's the opposite.
Paul, I'm going to come to you shortly, but I want to bring in Dave from Minnesota because he's right up there. Dave, come on, join the conversation.
Hey, guys. See, I want to kind of just add on to what Paul was saying about Jacob Frey. He's a gayer version of Justin Trudeau, if that's possible. But Minnesota's always had that problem with carpetbaggers. And Dr. Fetz, you'll probably recognize some of these names, like Woody Boshewitz, Norm Coleman, Al Franken. They're all three East carpet-bagging New York Jews. And somehow they become senators in Minnesota. So that's part of the problem.
And Dave, I was going to say, Dave, I don't know if you know this, but, of course, I just learned it, you know, myself, and I'll add this to what Danny was saying about, you know, this guy's supposed inexperience. This guy, Frey, supposedly only graduated from law school in 2009. So upon graduation from Villanova, okay, he goes and he moves to Minneapolis and he joins a law firm, and he immediately becomes active, and are you ready for this? In community organizing, whatever that is. And then it's like they write the script, what I call the gay liberal, you know, just virtue signaling script for these people. And these are the exact phrases. I shot from the hip talking about them earlier, but I'm going to read you these lines because I think it says it better here. In 2012, before running for office, Frey founded and organized. Are you ready for this now? I'm going to put the emphasis on it. Frey founded and organized the first big gay race. That's the name of it, the Big Gay Race, which was a charity to raise money for Minnesotans United for All Families, a political group for, ready for this, marriage equality. It's like, you can't make this up. They spit these people out of a mold.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, marriage equality, meaning marriage between men and other men having to be treated on a par as conventional heterosexual marriage, or between women and other women. Yeah, gay marriage.
And I have a quick reaction to a marriage between men and men. Yuck. Okay, go ahead.
Well, there's a number of people that are pretty awoke here in Minnesota right now, but I don't know if you guys have seen this meme going around, but they took this Floyd, he drove a 320 Mercedes-Benz. It's a kind of a little sedan or a SUV. It just so happens the police cruiser was 320. So with 32 being a Masonic, you know, number, that's probably part of it too.
About Masonic numerals being involved here in several different ways. You're right.
Yeah. And I'd like to see if somebody can run this guy's license plate, even if the car was registered to him at all.
Okay. I'm going to bring in Bill from Australia. We lost him. Bill, go ahead. Bill.
Can you hear me?
Bill from Australia, are you going to speak?
Yeah, I'm going to speak. Can you hear me, Jim?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, looks like another fake shooting, hey? Like a fake murder thing. They never stop these people. They're always faking stuff. It's a wonder that anyone believes anything now these days. It's hard to pick what's true. I think they get the weather sometimes.
Yeah, that's embarrassingly bad. We've been laying all the evidence out that this is completely
I really want to say at the moment.
Hello?
Bill Grant, go ahead. Join the conversation.
Yeah. Hey guys. Yeah. Thank you. You know, the other day, a couple days ago, I was leaning more towards this being, you know, natural, and it did look mostly natural to me. I see many unprofessional actions of police, punk thugs, and so on, even EMT and so on. But I did notice. First of all, I did not think it was an asphyxiation problem. I knew it could be the the artery issue. And I was up in the air as to whether or not they were basically it was a setup or an actual murder of the guy. Even though the whole thing does look set up, they still sometimes pick a patsy that they personally know and know something they have on and or that they have on them and so on. So I thought at the very least what happened was he blacked out. When you cut someone's arteries to the brain, it has happened to me personally and friends of mine. You black out. So it looked natural, at least based on that. Then maybe they could have claimed it was a murder. And, you know, maybe everything was set up except that guy was a patsy. That's a possibility. Now, we should never leave any possibility open. However, you know me, I do not like being pushed or pulled one way or the other until all the facts are in. But that was the guy was limp. And I'll
I wasn't rushing a judgment on this one either, Bill. I was completely open to the possibility it might have been a bona fide case of police brutality, but the evidence we've accumulated and presented here makes it overwhelmingly obvious this was a staged, orchestrated event.
Yeah,
a Democratic stunt, you know, it's like racism is scraping the bottom of their barrel, but I don't see how they can pin this on Trump. I just don't see it.
Yeah, exactly. But I agree. You know, I now, even though I missed most of the other videos and what Danny had to say about 40 minutes coming into listening late, I now still lean to that this was practically entirely orchestrated. My only question is, did that man know he was part of a planned stunt? Did he simply go unconscious? Or that can kill you. Can kill you.
Bill, you know, he and the officer worked together at the same club as security. Right. You know,
yeah,
that?
But
knew each other.
Yes, but people still use each other as patsies they once know. So yeah, that's,
they knew each other. They obviously prearranged. Now, whether he made him pass out, that might very well be.
Yeah.
In which case, we have a fake report from the medical examiner because the guy's not dead. He was rendered unconscious.
Yeah. Right.
Put him on a gurney and got him the hell out of there.
Yeah, and I lean to that. In other words, I do believe the whole thing was set up, but I just don't like throwing the whole towel into absolution. In other words,
okay. So, but here's the thing on that, just really quick. So, there's a number of people, but Miles Mathis is famous for going into this because he's always been approached by readers and you know followers about hybrid events. And as he said, and other people on YouTube channels that are now taken down, unfortunately, have also said the same thing, is they've never really found a hybrid event. Hybrid event would be he's really dead, but the whole thing was scripted. I believe he just acted limp. If you pay me a few hundred dollars, I could do a great job of acting limp. I don't think that's a big deal. So that's
I think you're right. They're either real or they're fake, and they can't afford, you know, to kill some people. I mean, you'd never get another crisis actor to sign on to stage an event if somebody got killed.
Yeah.
Well, hold on. Remember what I said. When you block those arteries, it's very easy, especially after 5 minutes, to lose consciousness. They may have planned him simply blacking out naturally. You know,
yeah, that may be the case. I mean, I won't be surprised if he's completely alive. You know, I don't think we're going to see him anytime soon.
Yeah.
We have another caller from the 909 area code I want to bring in. 909, join the conversation.
Thanks so much. Long time caller, first time listener. Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. I heard something on Tory Says on Red State today that I think is absolutely brilliant and would. I never thought of this, but she did, and I think everybody should hear it. And that is, if you really want to shut all this stuff down, get Donald Trump to put an executive order out calling you know, the bad guy, George Soros, an enemy of the state, and shutting down all of his businesses, including the Democratic Party.
I do think Soros has been behind an awful lot of these. I agree with you that he is an enemy of the state, and he ought to be so designated. I think that's a nice observation. Was that Dave from Minnesota was trying to squeeze a word in edgewise?
That was
go ahead.
Oh, Danny. Go ahead, Danny. Go ahead.
Okay, Dr. Fetzer, I want to put something in everybody's mind, your callers, your listeners, and stuff like this. This is very important. I think this is going to wrap up the last two or three callers. You know, we live in a digital world. Everything is online. So let me explain. I can take any criminal suspect in the United States, any criminal suspect. I can run his name through several databases that I have access to. Okay, this is very important to understand this. And when I run that person's name, I can see everything about them. I can see their social security. I can see their driver's license. I can see the vehicles they own. I can see their criminal record. I can see when they are arrested. I can see when they had a traffic ticket. Okay, I can see their cell phone numbers. All right, I see their home address, their past home address. And I'll just leave it at that. So as I do a background check, every single time I see that person's name come up, their relatives, and their associates. It's very extensive, okay? And this is on any regular person. So let me explain this. If I were to do a background check on you, Dr. Fetzer, every single thing you've done in your life, every traffic ticket you've ever gotten, every vehicle you own, every home you've ever owned, I would be able to see the address, and I can see everything that you've done. And that is the way that it is, okay? When I go to these events, like this current event we're talking about in Minnesota, and I run the police officer, I run the criminal suspect, I run these backgrounds, and they come up zero. They come up a ghost. They don't own a car. They don't have a house. They've never lived anywhere. They don't even show up in the database as nobody, as never being existed, as never being born, having no relatives. The odds of that, sir, I'd have better luck winning the lottery. And that comes up time and time again when I run these fictitious characters, these shooters around the country, these victims. Why is it in these events that are popular on television that we all talk about, that these are always the characters that I cannot do a background check on? I can only do it on the regular public, the regular people that walk down the street. This guy is an actor. I am convinced that his name isn't even George Floyd because he does not come up in the database. He does not exist. The officer, there's something wrong with his background. He owns property. He's recently from Florida. So is his wife. His house does not match the neighborhood that we're seeing on the news. I think that was a red herring video. I think there's red herring stories being planted, like the club owner saying they work together. I can't even verify that story. That could be a rabbit trail story to send people down a rabbit trail to look the other direction. No matter what you do, you cannot get away from the fact that this man has no background. There's only three people in the entire state of Minnesota that have that name, okay? Three. One is 105 years old. The second one is 95 years old. The third one is 35 years old. And his name is actually Floyd George in reverse. And I've tracked down his photos. It is not the man we see on the news being choked. There's something going on.
Danny, that's devastating proof that we're dealing with crisis actors using fake names, I have no doubt. Paul, before you say anything, I want to bring in Dominic from New York. Dominic, go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Fetzer. I don't know, maybe this is a simple point from a simple mind, but what was this man's crime supposedly? He was trying to pass a fake $20 bill.
Yes. Well, you said forgery. That would be counterfeiting, but go ahead.
Yeah, like, I mean, have you ever gone to the store and you give the guy a bill and they put a marker on it to see if it's real or not?
Yeah, go ahead.
That's how they check to see if it's counterfeit or not. So that could happen to anybody. Somebody could pass you a $20 bill that's fake.
Sure.
And then you go to the store.
Sure.
And the guy puts a mark on it, and then he calls the police and says, hey, This guy tried to pass me a bad bill, but you didn't.
Yeah.
You got it from somebody else. You know what I mean? Is there, are we overlooking the point that this is totally a simple matter that led to this?
It's well, it doesn't look like the appropriate way to respond under any circumstances. Mary Bailey, I'm going to bring you in now. Mary, give us your thoughts.
Mur. Yeah. Hey, paging Ole Damegard, pick up the phone, please. There's a shoe framed in one of the...
Very good,
Mur. You know, it's all so hokey. Don't let them frighten you.
Excellent. Nice point.
And I sent you that Daily Mail article. He definitely does have a background.
I use that a lot.
How did he get hired for security with that background to begin with?
Yeah, the whole thing's strange, isn't it? It's all a mess.
And the little toothpick arm guy, that's his buddy, actually. And, you know, there's a great big black guy. The story was they were trying to transfer him between police cars when he tried to
escape. It's just ridiculous. It's because it's a monster pile of bullshit. I know that Brew is back. Brew, you have give us a minute worth of your latest thoughts.
Well, George Floyd was a saint. Even his fiance said so. Every time they ate dinner, they said prayer before dinner, and they always did church service and everything else. Here's to Bruce, if Bruce is still on the line. Bruce, is it customary for paramedics to wear bulletproof vests? Probably not. Is it customary for paramedics to have an ankle holster with a sidearm in it? Probably not. Who were the real paramedics? Where were the real paramedics? Who was allegedly checking up on this George Floyd when he was unconscious or dead at the time? When they did check his pulse, they didn't secure his head properly to check his pulse properly. They didn't secure him to the gurney properly to carry him away, so his head was flopping around as they carried him away. That's not proper, and this is up to Bruce to say, that's not proper procedure. And the fact that they didn't do CPR or anything else and so on and so forth. So those are all anomalies there.
Allegedly. Great points, Brew. Danny.
So,
Go ahead. Okay, yeah. Brew, go ahead. A few more seconds.
Well, here's something that a fellow host here at Revolution Radio shared with me, that Steven Jackson, an ex-NBA star, rallies for justice for his brother Floyd. See, Steven Jackson is 43 and Floyd is supposed to be 46. Well, they were regarded as twins. And Jackson would always try and help out Floyd. And then there's a whole, if you look up Steven Jackson, you'll find up all sorts of articles of Jackson speaking out. Then there's also a rapper, Killer Mike, that was also decades ago in coercion, association with George Floyd, because they did rap music together. So he has a whole other background and whatever else. So there's a whole mess of things going on here. Okay.
Thank you, Dave, from Minnesota. Paul, you want to add a few more words? We're getting tight. Go ahead. Make these your final comments.
Okay, so just real quickly, two things. First, I was going to mention to Chase, next time you call, if you want to say where you're from, you can. If not, that's okay. In my past life, I lived in the 805 multiple places. I lived in Isla Vista, Goleta, Lompoc, Santa Maria. I love that area. I went to school at UCSB. So anyway,
Jimmy
on
Jones.
This whole thing, I do want to say this. Okay, I know that a lot of it is not organic, all the rioting and the protests, and I'm sure some of it is. And, you know, I had a thought about it. No matter what you got to say about black people, and believe me, we can all say a lot of negative things, they do show a kind of cohesion and camaraderie and an outrage that I think we white people should learn from, because we should have been doing stuff like that about all this COVID-19 stuff. You know, that wouldn't be a bad idea, you know, to let these people know.
My impression is that black families generally are about as conservative as white were back in the 50s, that they're much more ordinary Americans than most Americans seem to think. I think they're much more conventional. I don't believe they're enthusiastic about this at all. I think this is all inspired and manufactured and provoked, and it's a massive Democratic psyop to try to regain some ground because they've lost so much to Donald Trump. They are panic-stricken at the prospect he's going to win a landslide, continue to appoint Supreme Court justices and drain the swamp, and believe me, it is coming. It is coming. Yeah. Danny.
Jim, can Bill say something?
Yeah.
Can I say something?
Go ahead, Bill.
Go.
Yeah, you know that I saw a black guy get strangled by six cops once. Now, that looked real to me. And he was saying, I can't breathe. Is that connected to this?
What are you talking about? COVID-19.
We don't know what case.
Well, there was a video on the internet, and six cops jumped on a big black guy, and they strangled him to death. That looked real. Yeah. And he was saying, I can't breathe.
I want to answer Jim. Can I address Danny real quick?
Bill, thanks. No, yeah, I want Danny to have the last word. Danny, give us your thoughts.
You know, sir, the thing is, you know, the anomalies are adding up. None of the professionals have done their job the way they're supposed to do in the circumstance. I don't believe any of it. I don't believe the paramedics were real. I think they were actors because they did not act as they are trained. I don't believe that officer was real because he did not act the way he was trained. The other names of the other officers that I was able to obtain, the names I could hardly pronounce. They're very strange foreign names that I can't even pronounce, and I'm having a very hard time running them down as well.
They're probably made up names, Danny. That's deliberate. They're fabricated names.
Yes.
Danny.
The fact that the suspect doesn't come up on any record, the fact that nobody that's involved with this is coming up, there's so many deep anomalies involved.
Yeah.
This says false flag all over.
Yeah. Paul, real quick. Paul.
Hey, can I give Danny the license plate of the guy of the perp?
Yeah, go ahead.
5RJ026, Danny, if you can look that up, if that car actually belonged to Floyd. It's Minnesota license plate.
Give it to him again, slower.
5RJ026.
5RJ026, Minnesota.
Yep.
Danny, all right, I'll run it down.
Danny, you've been sensational. You've been all over this. I'm really happy with all the callers. I thought you all made important contributions, one and all. Every single one of you. Brew, I thank you for coming back. You made a lot of excellent points there in your second round. Very well done. Murr, everyone, Chase, Giuseppe, Bill from Australia, Bill Grant, Dave from Minnesota. You guys are all doing a fantastic job. Dominic from New York, too. This is falling apart at the seams. It's just what we want, to have a lot of aware and concerned citizens who won't take the bullshit any longer and can call it out. You're doing a great job, and I'm very proud to have you calling into this show. I'm very glad you're here. Danny, you were just super. And Mitchell, Mr. Rowe had a nice point too there. I wouldn't be surprised if they're recycling Sandy, you know, a crisis actors from Sandy Hook and the Boston bombings of Minnesota. We've seen it before. The woman who played Susan Brough, the mother of Heather Heyer, also played the mother of the teacher at Sandy Hook. That's ridiculous.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Most guys freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
Your body's filling with adrenaline right now, whether you know it or not. Your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. Biological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger, unafraid, right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio!
Hi, everybody. It's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media, political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get